If you guys have a Bible, Luke chapter 14 is where we're going to be this morning. If you want to go ahead and turn there. We are in the midst of a series entitled The Six, in which we're talking about the core traits that we believe someone who is becoming more like Jesus embodies. Now, a lot of times churches talk about what you need to believe, and belief is a very important thing, don't get me wrong. But if belief is not paired with action, if orthodoxy, right thinking, is not paired with orthopraxy, right living, then your orthodoxy falls short. And so we've talked over these last couple weeks about certain core traits that we think embody what it means for us to be more like Jesus. Someone who's becoming like Jesus, a person who is always growing. Last week we talked about someone who is always connected, someone connected in Christian community. We'll also talk about someone who sacrifices, who serves, who gives. Those are all core traits. And this morning we talk about someone who includes others in this great story of Jesus. Which begs the question, how exactly do you tell other people this good news? Jesus looks at his disciples and said, go out and make disciples. So how do you do that? Paul says that you are ministers of reconciliation. So how do you tell people this good news? Well, first of all, let me tell you how you don't do that, which now makes this a great time to give us another round of bad church signs, because there's no better way to see how not to tell people about Jesus than to look at some of the church signs that we see across this great country of ours. So without further ado, William, would you show us this first sign? This is a good way to not tell people that they're included in the love of Jesus. I'm going to go with a two-year-old holding up a sign that says, ask me why you deserve hell. I don't know how many two-year-olds can answer that question, but maybe that's a little precocious boy. Now, this next one I think you're really going to like. This is a church marquee sign that says, sunscreen prevents sunburn. I actually like that one. I'm going to actually use that one. Okay, let's go to the next one. Now, for those of you who are tech savvy, you're really going to like this. Jesus died for my space in heaven. See what they did there? And you thought social media was not going to be an eternity. I guess it is. All right, let's go to this next one. Compared to Satan, Voldemort is a kitten. That's for all you Harry Potter fans out there. Where is Lindy Jones when I need her? All right, this next one is really, really, really very pertinent. God's love is deeper than the snow. There's no snow there, I don't think. You always got to keep your signs up to date. Now, this next one, I know that these haven't gone over as well as I expected. This next one will definitely work. God does not make mistakes. Except it's spelled. Anyway, and this last one, I guarantee you, you're going to love this one. Okay. Love God and others. It's not rocket surgery. Now, if you're in rocket surgery, you're going to realize that is a difficult thing. If you don't know, then you're just going to miss a point there. Side note, do you notice that most of those signs are by Churches of Christ? Awesome. So that's my heritage. Right on. Okay. If you don't have a Bible, the words will be on the screen, but we're going to be in Luke 14 if you want to go ahead and turn there. Luke chapter 14. When one of those at the table with him heard this, he said to Jesus, blessed are those who will eat at the feast in the kingdom of God. Jesus replied, a certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servants to tell those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, I've just bought a field and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. Another said, I've just bought 5 yoke of oxen and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. Still another said, I just got married, so I can't come. The servant came back and reported this to his master. Then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servant, go out quickly into the streets and the alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you ordered has been done, but there is still room. Then the master told his servant, go out to the roads and country lanes and compel them to come in so that my house will be full. I tell you, if it was a Texan translating this, it would say, I tell y'all, it's to everyone, I tell you, it's plural, you all, not one of those who were invited will get a taste of my banquet. Now, preachers don't like to tell sermons and tell stories about parties that you're supposed to throw in which you don't invite the people you like, but the people you don't like. Because inevitably, when you're a preacher, you end up getting invited to a party a few weeks later. And then you're sitting there next to this person and their mother-in-law, and it's just you guys there, and you start to wonder, am I the people that this person doesn't like? I don't know. But Jesus tells these stories where you're supposed to throw this big party, and who are you supposed to invite? Well, the story is the master decided to throw this massive party. And he tells the servants, go out and tell everyone that I know, everyone who's my friend, tell them there's a party. And one by one, these people came back with excuses. The first said, no, I just got some land. I had to work on it. The other person said, I just bought 5 yoke of oxen, so I can't come to your party. Ironically, that was also the excuse I heard when some girl told me she couldn't go on a date in college. I guess that's a big deal. The other person said, I just got married. I can't make it. And so the master got angry and said, just bring everyone from the highways and the byways and bring them all here, because the last thing you want when you throw a party is for no one to RSVP. I had a friend, a college student a few years ago, who was talking with a girl that he really liked on a Friday morning. And he was talking to her, and the girl asked him, hey, Phil, what are you doing tonight? And Phil just said, I'm having a party with a few of my friends, except there was no party. He just made it up. And so she goes, oh, really? That sounds great. And he goes, yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Why don't you stop by? And she goes, oh, well, maybe I will. And so she leaves, and Phil freaks out because there is no party. He has no friends coming over. And the girl said, well, maybe I'll show up. Now, the problem is Phil was a college student, so he didn't realize that when a girl says, oh, maybe I'll show up, that means nothing. She's not going to show up, but he doesn't know this. So he goes out and he finds every friend that he can think of and throws this massive party at his house because he wants there to be a party, because he told a girl that he liked that there's going to be a party. So he has a party on a Friday night, and guess who doesn't show up? The girl. Of course, she doesn't throw up. But the point of the story is, when you say there's a party, the last thing you want is for no one to show up. In this parable, there's at least two levels to it, but at least two levels. The first level is that there is a great new thing that is happening to the Jewish people. In the person of Jesus, God is fulfilling all the wishes that the Jewish people had for the new David, a new king to come in and sit on the throne. But the Jews aren't signing up for this story of Jesus because they have their excuses. It's not land, it's not oxen, it's not weddings. Their excuses sound a little bit different. They say, Jesus of Nazareth? He's from Nazareth. Does anything good come out of Nazareth? Or they say, isn't that the son of Joseph? We know his parents. Or maybe another excuse is, Jesus, his disciples don't even fast. How can this be the Messiah? All the excuses they could come up with prevented them from showing up to the experience of Jesus. And so now in Jesus, God is bringing everyone, whether you're from God's original chosen family or you're a Gentile like the rest of us, you are now included in this party. The other level is, it's not just the ethnically right people, it's the morally right people. The people at first were invited were the good people, the ones who've done enough to show everyone they're the good people. But now in Jesus, it doesn't matter if you've convinced everyone you're good enough or you've convinced everyone you're not good enough. In Jesus, everyone is welcome to the party. There is a huge feast, and the last thing God wants is for no one to show up. So now everyone is invited. Now here's our part in the story. You have been invited to celebrate in this banquet, this feast, this heavenly banquet. But God doesn't want the place to be empty. No one wants a party where no one's showing up. And so now Jesus looks at you and says, join the job of the servants, inviting everyone around you. Your job is to bring everyone in to this feast, to this celebration. You are pressed with the responsibility of including everyone else. But the problem is, people always have excuses, right? There's always an excuse why you don't want to be a part of this event. Sometimes people have good excuses. Sometimes not so good excuses. There's a Canadian sociologist. His name was Reginald Bibby. And Reginald Bibby says that it's not that people are leaving their church. They just aren't showing up. His point is that it's not that people have some objection to church, so they're just leaving church altogether. It's just they just don't care to show up anymore. And I think he's right. You know, in my experience, rarely is it that someone decides, I'm going to stop going to church because I have some mental objection to faith. Now, I'm not saying some people don't. That's definitely real, and I say that's a legitimate claim for some people. But for the majority of people, it's not that. It's not they're sitting in a Bible class one day and they're reading Deuteronomy, and they get to the point in the book of Deuteronomy, because Deuteronomy, supposedly written by Moses, where in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 34, Moses writes about his own death, which is kind of tough to do. It's not like someone reads that and goes, "Ugh, I'm out," and they leave church. That's not what happens to most people. They don't have this mental objection to Christianity. It's that they just are indifferent. The issue for most people is they just stop caring. It's not a big part of their life. It's not important to them. And so the problem with most of us is that we spend so much of our life on the perimeter of life that we never come in and deal with issues of the core. It's that we are numbed and distracted by things out here, so we never deal with things of the heart. And you hear this in the way that we talk. You hear that we live out here and this is the world that matters, not what's in here. When you hear phrases like, "Well, that's the bottom line," or "Let's talk about the brass tacks," what are we talking about? We're talking about money. That's the bottom line. That's what really matters. That's what's really important to us. So that's where we live our life in that world. It's been said that the two primary mediating institutions of our age are the media and the business world. The two things that give us direction and focus and push us on in life is the business world and the media. Those are the two things that mediate our existence, which means we're always living out here and we never venture into issues of the core. And so maybe it's not that we're bad, it's just that we're busy. It's that we're less devious and more distracted. It's not that we're full of negativity. It's just that we are numb to issues of the heart because we're living at arm's length away from matters of the core. Because we have chosen to be entertained instead of to experience peace. We would rather not be bored than to develop depth. And so we never have issues of the heart. The excuse is really the exact same thing as the excuse that was in the parable. The parable said, "I have work to do. I have property to take care of. I have things going on in my life so that I can't deal with this issue." The issue for most people is not a mental objection to faith. It's not an objection to Jesus as the Messiah. The question is not of the legitimacy of Jesus as Messiah. It's the need for Jesus as the Messiah. That's the excuse. It's just blatant indifference. Will's got a slide he's going to put up on the screen right now. And I'm going to ask you if you've ever seen this before. Has anyone ever seen this before? Do you know what this is? Now, some of you are thinking, "I love me some yogurt. I love the yogurt." That would be great if you put some of those gummy bears on it. Maybe you drop some of those Butterfinger crunches in there. That would be really good because you're thinking it's yogurt, but it's not yogurt. You know I wouldn't do that. You know what that is? It's mechanically separated meat. The very things you find in chicken nuggets. Now, I went to the source of all wisdom, Wikipedia, and Wikipedia describes mechanically separated meat this way. They said it is a paste-like meat product produced by forcing beef, pork, turkey, or chicken under high pressure through a sieve or similar device to separate the bone from the edible meat tissue. Doesn't that sound great? Anyone hungry? Yeah, that's good stuff. Okay, thank you. Now, this was invented in the 50s. Now, but there became a big issue with mechanically separated meat in 1986 because there was an outbreak of mad cow disease. And as you all know, mad cow disease is transmitted to humans mostly through the spinal cord, which, guess what? That is included in mechanically separated meat. So when you are enjoying that chicken McNugget, you know it's in it, a little bit of spinal cord. So the question is, why do people eat that? Why do we eat mechanically separated meat? Because it's cheap and it's easy and it's fast and it's convenient. So when you get that beautifully golden brown crispy chicken McNugget and you dip it in honey and you take a bite of it and it tastes so yummy, as long as it's not in your tummy, because then it's all off limits. But when it's in your mouth, it still tastes so good. And it's that breaded stuff and the honey and that sweet aftertaste of spinal cord. It is so good because it is quick and it's easy and it's fast and it's convenient. We choose to have mechanically separated meat. We have a food-like substance instead of taking the time to have a beautiful meal, the same thing happens with our spiritual experience. We would rather choose to be entertained than to experience peace. We would rather not be bored than to develop depth, because we take what is convenient. And so the reason that we don't develop issues of a heart and develop and live out of our core and our heart and our soul is because we are too busy living, keeping ourselves an arm's length away from matters of the heart. That's the excuse. That's why people don't participate in the feast. Okay, now God has called us to invite people to this banquet that many of us are too indifferent to celebrate it. God has called you to go out into your community and your school place and your work and your neighbor and say, guys, there is a feast. Get rid of this mechanically separated meat. Get rid of this food-like substance and enjoy something of substance that's real. And it's your job to include everyone in that feast. So how do you do that? How do you do that? Let me tell you how you don't do that. You don't control people and think that you can change them. Many of us feel like it is our job to control people, and that never works out, does it? You can't control an adult. And so maybe we should stop thinking that it's our job to force people to behave a certain way and to believe a certain way, and realize that it is our job to not make people believe or behave, but to make people belong. It's been said that you can't think yourself into a new way of living, but you can live yourself into a new way of thinking. And if that is true, then that gives us further confirmation that our job is to make people belong and trust that God can make people behave. I've got this great sermon about Zacchaeus, and I compare him to Tom Cruise's character in The Last Samurai. It's brilliant in my opinion. Now, what happens is, in Zacchaeus, if you've ever heard the story of Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus is a wee little man that had a problem with materialism, caught a bad case of affluenza, as they call it. Now, I compare him to Tom Cruise's character in The Last Samurai, who is a soldier who is addicted to alcohol. So they both have their addiction. And the story of Zacchaeus is that Jesus is welcomed by going into his home. Jesus welcomes Zacchaeus by going to his home. Now, Tom Cruise, on their hand, is welcomed into a Japanese home. And so he starts to change. Now, at the end of Zacchaeus' story, Jesus says, salvation has come to your house. And at the end of Tom Cruise's story, the narrator says that the character found what many seek but few get, peace. So you see the comparison. So I think it's a brilliant sermon. The only problem is I've done it numerous times and it always flops. Like, everyone just looks at me like, that makes no sense at all. And I always had this like conversation with Lindsay afterwards. And yes, I've preached this multiple times. And yes, it's flopped multiple times. But I always had this conversation with Lindsay afterward. I'm like, Lindsay, what'd you think? Was that good? And she looks at me and goes, I'm really proud of you, Luke. We can go wherever you want for lunch. I'm like, well, thank you. But do you get the comparison? And she looks at me something like, yeah, they're both short. I get that. They're both short. You want to go to Chipotle, don't you, Luke? Yeah, and it always flops. It never works. But the story of Zacchaeus is a beautiful picture of how this works. The story of Zacchaeus is you have this tax collector who clearly something is not right in his life, because when was the last time you saw a tax collector climb a tree? That doesn't happen. So he climbs this tree and Jesus says, come on down, I'm going to your house. In what seems to us is kind of a rude thing to invite yourself over, but in those days it was a sign of acceptance and grace, and that Jesus says, I welcome you by going to your house. Jesus lets him belong first, and then his actions change. Some have kind of boiled down Christianity to belief, behavior, and belonging. That if someone's going to be a Christian, they belong to a church, they behave a certain way, and they believe certain things. And if you think about the way most of us in church have often done, including others in the story, we have a certain order with that. We say, if you behave right and you believe right, then you can belong in our church, right? The story of Zacchaeus goes a different order. There was a gentleman from my church in Florida that I was a big fan. I really liked this guy. He was really a fun guy to know. He would come up to my office like once a week after he got out of prison, and we would talk for an hour or so or longer. And he just seemed like a really fun guy. I really enjoyed getting to know him. But not everyone was a big fan of him. You see, He was a close talker, and that's fine. Like if you're a normal heighted adult male like me at 5'11 and a half, like a very good height. But if you're 6'5 and you're way too tall and you're a close talker, just really even more awkward. And so he's a close talker. And so every time you talk, his do-rag would be kind of like flopping in your face. And he had a problem with talking too much in church, like during Bible classes and stuff. Like someone would be talking about, you know, the Bible, and he would get up and make some statement like, "This church is empty 5 nights a week. We are wasting our land. We're wasting our property." And he would get mad about it. Come to find out, he knew that because he slept in our parking lot 5 nights a week when no one else was there. So he was trying to help with our stewardship of our property. And people didn't like that. One time someone tried to fight him in a Bible class, which is really awkward because I had to break it up. And he eventually was no longer welcomed at church. One time after Wednesday night Bible class, I turned the lights off. And if you've ever been in a church when the lights are off, like it's a weird thing, like the lights are on and like I'm Simba, you know, I hear me roar, I run this place, and I turn the lights off and I'm like Hello Kitty, you know, just it's horrifying. And so I turn the lights off and I'm going to set the alarm on the other side of the building off, and I walk over to do it, and there is 6'5" Mike standing right there as he's about to try to sleep on the couch. And I see him, I freak out, he freaks out. It was a terrible thing. And people hear these stories of what he's doing. He's talking out in class, he's trying to sleep in the building, he's sleeping in the property, and eventually he was no longer welcome. Why? Because he didn't behave. He didn't behave, so people said, "You can't belong." Once got an email from a gentleman who was interested in being a part of a church, and his email was a list of questions about a bunch of different theological issues. A bunch of different theological questions, what you think of this and this and this. And at first I thought he was trying to quiz me, and I didn't really understand where he was going with the story. I didn't understand what he was doing. And then I finally realized at the end of it that he was just asking, if I believe this about this issue, is that okay? Can I still be a part of the church? He's living out of an experience in which a church has told him, if you believe a certain thing, then you can belong. It's out of order. That's not how it works. One of the first relationships that I feel like God worked through in my life in more of an overt way was this kid I knew in high school, and you've probably heard me talk about this before, but he was a kid that had a lot of questions about faith and theology and the Bible, and day after day for my junior year, he brought me all these questions about how there's contradictions in the Bible or contradictions of faith, and how does this all work, and seriously, every day, we were talking about this stuff, and I go off to college, and he calls me and says, "You know, I want to get baptized. I want to follow Jesus." And at the time, I felt like it was because I gave him the right answers that made him sign up for faith. And I thought I just had the good answers, and so that's why he decided to follow Jesus. But as I got more mature, I realized it wasn't that I gave him the right answers. It was I gave him the space to ask the question. I let him belong. And that's what God works through. When it comes to inviting people to be a part of this beautiful banquet, you have been tasked with that responsibility. And the way you do that is you don't control the way people behave and you don't control the way people believe. But your job is to make people belong and to show them a different way of living, a way of living in which you don't get stuck living out on the perimeter. And it's a way of living in which you actually deal with matters of the heart and the core. And in doing so, you give God the space to work in their life. But you must remember first and foremost that your job as someone who helps people be included is you let them belong. That is your call. Now, as we've been going through the series, I've been asking former members of Venture to talk about how Venture helped them grow in this specific trait. And unfortunately, we've had so many people move off and take jobs different places that I have a lot of people I can call, which is awesome, I guess, for right now. But it's annoying at the time. But this morning, I asked our old friend Vince Gill to help with the issue of how do you help people be included in the story? Because there are few, I don't know if I've met anyone, honestly, who's as good about including others into the story of Jesus like Vince. Vince would bring people from school, from his neighborhood, from his apartment, He once got in a car accident and had to go to a masseuse to, you know, work on his back. And the next thing I know, she shows up at church the next Sunday, which I don't know, how do you do that conversation? Like, I carry a lot of tension in my back. You want to come on back with me to church? I mean, how do you make that conversation? I don't know. But Vince does it. So I was really glad that he was willing to do this. He currently is in Seoul, Korea, teaching over there. So they have videos over there. So it works somehow. That's awesome. Anyway, without further ado, that is Vince. I'm going to stall while we get the audio up and running. One of the things you'll notice is that Vince has an adult haircut. If you knew him beforehand, he didn't have one of those before. But he is all grown up now. While we're working on that, what he's saying is
so amazing.
Something about including
others. My name is Vincent Gill. Coming to you all the way from Seoul, Korea.
Yeah, let's. Yeah, there you go.
Some of you may not know me. I was a part of the church probably back in 2009. And I was just so blessed by the people at Venture. Just the grace and the unconditional love that I received there was so amazing. It was actually so good that I wanted to bring other people into that because I knew that that would be a blessing to others. And so regardless of whether it was people at school or if it was people in the apartment complex where I lived or if it was my physical therapist, just anybody, I wanted them to receive this amazing love of God that I was getting through the community at Venture. And so because of that, you know, Venture just has a special place in my heart, and I hope to get the opportunity to see you guys again soon.
All right, well, obviously you couldn't hear that audio too well, but what he was saying at the beginning of the audio is that Venture was such a blessing to him that he felt like he had to go share it with others. And it is a very basic, simple concept that all of us need to grasp is that once something is so good for you, then you have no response but to share it with someone else. So, one suggestion on how to do this is if you are going to be selling it, you better be smoking it yourself. If you're going to be selling the good news of Jesus, you better be living it out yourself as well. And if you're going to say there is a beautiful feast that says you do not have to live on food like substance, you don't have to live on the perimeter, but you can live out of the core, you must be living from there yourself. You must be a person who learns to live in silence and learns to live out of the story of Jesus. Because if you are going to be selling it, you must be living it out yourself. This morning, I'm going to invite you to stand up as we close, and I am going to pray a prayer of blessing over you. We are going to be singing a song that our good friend Sean will be leading us in a second. And there is a great bridge in this song that says, "Fill us up and send us out. Fill us up and send us out." And that is a beautiful prayer for us this morning as God has called us to be people who are sent out with the good news that you are all welcome. So first, we must be filled up on that good news ourselves. Let's pray. God, I pray that you would fill us up with your presence and your peace and your hope. May we be overwhelmed by the grace that we have in Jesus. That in our most dark and devious and bad parts, that you have covered that with Jesus' blood, and that that has given us hope and grace. And that in you there is life and there is fulfillment and there is a life that is above this age. Let us embrace that. Let us partake in that. And let us be full on that so that we can go out and include others in this feast. We pray this in Jesus' name.